This is Marginalia, a production of KMUW Wichita.
Marginalia. Notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes which are incidental
or additional to
the main topic in the margin of a book.
In this podcast, I visited with Michael Finkel about his new book, The Stranger in the Woods, The Extraordinary Story of the Last True Hermit. The story is really Christopher Knight's story. In 1986, Knight was 20 years old. He left his home and job in Massachusetts, drove to Maine, left his keys in his unlocked car, and walked into the woods where he didn't speak with another human being for 27 years. Okay, there was one time he encountered a hiker and said hi, but that's one syllable in 27 years. So after he was exposed, it's understandable why Christopher Knight had no intention of telling his own story. So he allowed Finkel to do it for him. I recently spoke with Michael Finkel about Knight's extraordinary time in the woods. I'm Beth Golay, this is Marginalia, and here's our conversation. Wow, what a story. The Stranger in the Woods is the story of Christopher Knight, a man who, at the age of 20, left his job, his life, and walked into the woods in central Maine where he lived without human interaction for the next 27 years. And many locals talked about a hermit living in the area, especially when items started disappearing from their cabins. But until he was caught in 2013, other locals thought the hermit was just a myth. Now, whether his existence was perpetuated through myth or proven after he was caught, this hermit captured imaginations. What is it about Christopher Knight that we find so compelling?
I don't think there's probably too many people out there who don't at least once in a while in the middle of a traffic jam while checking your email on your phone while late for an appointment and two kids crying in the back perhaps think, man, I would like to get away from it all. I probably think that a couple of times a week, if not a day. I have three little kids. I love them dearly, but boy, life is overwhelming. And there's this fantasy I think many of us have of just like, hey, what would it be like if we just dropped everything and just escaped the world for a while? And that's what Christopher Knight did. And people have done this throughout human history. Humans have a 5,000-year written history. And since the very first time we've been writing things down, we've been writing about hermits. It's sort of this primal fascination and this primal sort of ideal, like, let's just get away from it all.
And so that's what drew you to his story when you saw that he was captured, this, you know, this instinct that we all every once in a while want to get away?
Well, I read a very tiny news article in a Maine newspaper. Chris Knight escaped in central Maine in the northeast United States. And he was caught breaking into a summer camp stealing some food supplies. And I was interested, you know, he said once he was caught that he had been away and living in the woods for 27 years. And that was very interesting to me. And he said he hadn't talked to anyone. He even had one conversation, and that was interesting to me. And then he said that he never even lit a fire all that time, and that was sort of almost on the verge of unbelievable. But what really sort of grabbed my interest from sort of curiosity to possible obsession was the fact that he also stole books, hundreds, perhaps thousands of books. He stole Shakespeare, he stole, you know, James Joyce, he stole poetry, he stole history, and in that moment that I read, it was possibly the last sentence of this little article, that he had stolen all these books, what happened in my mind's eye was that he shifted from perhaps a crazy man living in the woods to something more, and I really wanted to know what that something more was.
You know, Christopher Knight survived 27 years during the harshest of Maine winters, and like you said, he never lit a fire. He never left a track in the snow. He never got sick. Do you think he was remarkable, or could most humans accomplish those feats?
I think remarkable is an understatement. It's sort of interesting. I spoke with many people that live in central Maine, especially people that own cabins along North and Little North Pond, where Chris Knight did his stealing. And it was sort of funny that the better a person knew Maine and what it was like in the winter, the less someone could believe that he was able to do this. Here's like the sort of list of things that they couldn't believe. One, just camping out for a couple of nights in the middle of winter in Maine is very, very difficult, let alone a couple of weeks, let alone the entire winter. And then not lighting a fire, really, and the reason he didn't light a fire was he knew that smoke would give his hiding place away. That's really defies belief. And then you have, how is it possible that a person could go 27 years living a very rugged existence and never need to see a doctor? That seems incredible. And you know, food stored in a camp in the woods is always attacked by animals. How is that possible? And you know, if you don't talk for 27 years, how could you suddenly speak poetically, lyrically, with a big vocabulary? That's not possible. And also, the great ice storm of 1998, you know, anybody who spent 5 minutes out there told me there's just no way that Chris Knight would not have been frozen to death. So there's like this sort of, among the people of Maine, there was literal disbelief. It is a story that is very, very, very hard to get your head around. And at the same time, it is undoubtedly completely true.
You know, after he was caught, a lot of people reached out to Knight in jail, but were not even acknowledged. Why do you think he responded to you?
You know, growing up, when I had every time I had a birthday party, my mother would make me sit down and hand write thank you notes. She always said it's very important that a handwritten note is sent. And I say that only because she was right. And after I read about Chris Knight's story and immediately wanted to know more, I knew that this was, he was locked in jail, but I knew this was an occasion where a typed message or an email or a text to his lawyer was not going to cut it. And I sat down and I hand wrote a letter to Knight saying that I was a journalist, that I had also spent a decent amount of time outdoors, nothing near what Chris Knight did, and I love to read. Certainly didn't read nearly as many books as Chris Knight did, but I wrote it on paper and put it in an envelope, remember those things, with stamps, and mailed it. And I have a feeling, though plenty of other journalists tried to get in touch with Knight, I think he appreciated that the handwritten note, as he said to me in his very first letter back, you know, their handwritten letters are always personal, no matter their content.
Knight was jailed because he was able to survive through theft. And of everything he stole, what surprised you the most?
I mean, in addition to being possibly the most secluded human that has ever lived in all of history, in addition to being an amazing survivalist, even if he was with a couple other people and survived 27 winters, in addition to being extremely intelligent and well-read, in addition to having a legend built up about him, Chris Knight was a master thief. And it was sort of an interesting way that he stole. He never smashed a window. He never kicked in a door. He was more like a Houdini. He could use he could use just the right tool or bobby pin or a little screwdriver and just open up a lock, even very complicated locks. And he would go into a house and he would take food. He wouldn't touch your computer. He wouldn't touch your jewelry. Sometimes he'd take a couple of dollars, but never spent one. He would not take anything of real value. He took batteries, flashlights, food, and books. And then he would leave. And always when he left, he would make sure to lock the door behind him because, you know, there's thieves out there. He wouldn't want anyone else to break in. Now, you asked me what was the most unusual thing he stole. You know, you would picture someone out in the woods maybe surviving. You know, I asked him one time, you know, how did he deal with all the bugs? Even Thoreau himself talked about how horrible the bugs were in Maine. And he said he stole bug spray. He always had toilet paper. He had a backcountry toilet, but he always had toilet paper. He stole deodorant and shaving cream. You know, sort of like these little items that you kind of think of as items of civilization that he also took in his hermitage in the woods that I think I find fascinating. Just the quotidian things, but it's sort of he built a life for himself completely alone in an extraordinary little room carved out of the very thick woods of central Maine.
Why did he dislike Thoreau so much? Or is that just my perception? I mean, he called him a dilettante.
So there have been hermits, as I mentioned, recorded by humans since we've been writing things down. Our oldest existing manuscripts are 5,000 years old, and they mentioned like wild men living alone in the woods. There's always been hermits at all times, at all cultures, a very, 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 very thin stream. Not very many people, but they have changed the way all of us live. And, you know, some hermits only spend a month away. For example, in the realm of religion, Jesus, Muhammad, Buddha, all three of them spent time alone before introducing a new religion to the world. And I think there's probably 3 billion people that follow one of those three religions. Einstein called himself a hermit in daily life. And a shocking number of painters, philosophers, writers, scientists. Knight knew about many of the hermits in history, and he didn't like most of them, and Thoreau specifically, because Thoreau, according to Knight, and probably according to Thoreau himself, He lived in Walden Pond for 2 years. He had many dinner parties, a lot of people over. He went into town. I think he ate lunch with his mother once a week. But also he wrote a book. And writing a book is basically telling the world, look at me, read what I have to think. It's not really directed inward. It's an action directed outward. And Knight's seclusion, Knight's solitude, had a certain purity. You know, he made his own rules. But he felt that anyone who went to the woods and brought back a poem or a book in Thoreau's case was looking for attention. And Knight wanted none of that. He felt that Thoreau's purpose was to basically make himself famous. And Knight wanted exactly the opposite of that. And I loved that he called him a dilettante. I don't know if I agree with Chris Knight, but 2 years in the woods with a dinner party once a week is nothing compared to 27 years without ever seeing another person. So if you're going to compare the two, I think you could call Henry David Thoreau a dilettante.
Now, you mentioned all of the different kinds of hermits there have been throughout history. And I loved all of the research that you included on all of the different types of hermits and solitaires. Did Christopher Knight fall into a specific category of hermit, in your opinion?
I will refrain from bragging about anything. I mean, if you like the book, that's fantastic. If you don't like the book, I understand. It's really Chris Knight's story. But I'm telling you, I fell into the rabbit hole of reading about hermits. And I might have to say, the only thing I think I can brag about is I might be, of all the people you'll ever talk to in your life, I may have read more about hermits than anybody else. I read the equivalent of more than, it's very much an understatement, more than 100 books written by and about hermits. It's fascinating how many people felt the need to write of their experiences. And also what was fascinating was how similar many of them were. And, you know, I basically took all the hermits in history, and you really can divide them into three general categories, the largest being hermits who sought solitude for religious reasons, to commune more fully with God, a category of hermits that really just didn't like the world and wanted to protest it and live alone. And then there were creative hermits, similar to Thoreau and many of the artists and writers that are solitude seekers, where they went to be away from everyone so that they could create. Chris Knight, as in so many things, was not only one of the longest serving hermits, he had perhaps the purest of all seclusions. He also is pretty much uncategorizable. He didn't really follow a religion. If anything, he perhaps was an adherent of Stoicism, which is a philosophy, an ancient Greek philosophy. He created no artwork, in fact, was adamantly opposed to that, and really had no opinion of the rest of the world. He did this purely for himself. And of course, the key, I'm just going to ramble on here a little bit, Beth. Of course, the key question for this book and for Chris Knight is, why would someone do this? Why? And I think I have an answer. And I think it's a simple and also perhaps a profound answer, which is that Chris Knight was really never comfortable in society. And many psychologists tried to pin a label on him, but he was pretty much, as with so many things, uncategorizable. But he was really uncomfortable. And I think it'd probably be fair to say that what most of us, probably close to every one of us, is looking for in life is to be as happy or as content as possible, the pursuit of happiness. I really think that is possibly almost everyone's goals, and some people do that by gathering as much money as possible. Some people do that by having a big family. Chris Knight, as he described to me during our visits, found this sense of contentment. Now, he certainly suffered during the winters, but he also found this sense of contentment, this sense of peace, this sense of happiness in his little room in the woods that most of us perhaps will never find. And so he decided to stay. Why did he leave? He left because it made him happy.
You know, you were just talking about all of the people who wanted to put a label on him. You know, when he was in jail, so many people tried to label him with a disorder. Why do you think that is?
I mean, I think it's generally a human impulse to organize and order things. And generally speaking, I think it works. If you have this set of symptoms, it's probably this disorder, and we'll treat it this way. It's the scientific method. And so there is, I think, an instinctual need to categorize. Every once in a while, though, in the world, you come across such an extreme outlier. And Christopher Knight is certainly an extreme outlier. And I spoke with many psychologists, autism experts, and they all told me, and I must repeat this, that there's no way they can make a diagnosis without speaking with Knight himself, but they agreed to comment and offer opinions. And their ideas were really ranged far and wide. You know, did he have Asperger's? Was he autistic? Perhaps, although a lot of he survived in a manner that no autistic person really has ever survived, or no non-autistic person for that matter. There's something called schizoid personality disorder. But anyway, a lot of labels were applied to him, and none of them really fit comfortably. He's uncategorizable, which makes the book and the story really interesting to me. But what also makes it interesting, at least in my opinion, is not just that Chris Knight is such an outlier, but how we all react to his story. I'm just going to roll on a little bit here. And I think Chris Knight's story itself has its great share of the barely credible. But I think when you ask people how they feel about him, people's feelings about him are also all over the map. There are people who told me, people that live in Maine, that they were jealous, that they wished all their life that they were brave enough to go live in the woods. There are people that told me that the intrusion of having someone break into your house over and over again is so traumatic that life imprisonment for this guy was the only acceptable punishment. And I found it fascinating. You know, nobody was wrong, of course, but I found it that how you react to Chris Knight says something about you, not necessarily about Chris Knight. That was another intriguing aspect to my reporting.
When you included pieces of the conversations that you had with Knight, he was so well-spoken and educated. And you mentioned that, you know, when you read about him stealing the books, that's what intrigued you the most. And even though he had stolen so many books, I'm not sure why I was so surprised that he was so well-spoken and educated. Were you surprised? Did he exceed your expectations? Did he meet your expectations about, you know, just from knowing how many books he stole to having conversations with him?
I was startled, to say the least, by the depth and degree of Knight's intelligence. You know, I used to run track when I was young, and I was fine. I was a good track runner. Every once in a while, I'd step on the track, and there would be someone who would just blow me away, just like this beautiful stride. And I would look at him and I'd be like, there's no amount of training I could ever do to be that good. It's just someone better than you. When I sat down across from Chris Knight in the Kennebec County Jail, and there was a piece of glass between us, and we were talking through scratchy phone receivers, even so, even with those hindrances, the power of his intellect really overwhelmed me. I knew for a fact I was sitting with someone who was smarter than me, and it was a little bit daunting. Not that I'm the most intelligent person, but this was like another degree. You know, he would mention a book he'd read, and I would nod my head. He said he read it 20 years ago. I'd said probably me too. And then he would talk about the specific scene, the specific character, and I'd be like, I don't really remember that. And he would sort of give me a momentary glance and this long blink that sort of spoke volumes, like, oh, your weak brain. And he possibly remembered everything he had ever read, had a depth of thought. In fact, I wasn't jealous of this because I think that Chris Knight sort of proves that you can be too smart for this world. And had this, again, as you mentioned, this poetic and beautiful way of speaking. And he was, not surprisingly, not a man of immense number of words, but when he spoke, he was very careful. And here's another thing that I found to be fascinating. And I'm not alone in this thought, really believe that Chris Knight not only never lied to me, but is practically incapable of lying. He told me that he wouldn't want to waste the words. He would either tell me something and it would be truthful, or he wouldn't tell me at all. And there's no talking a person into speaking to you that can be silent for 27 years. And even the arresting officers that caught Chris Knight, who are experts in being lied to, both of them independently told me they felt so strongly that Chris Knight was utterly honest. And if you know anything about my background, I was once fired from the New York Times for falsifying a story. So it's extremely important for me for my stories to be true. So not only did this make me feel better, but I also hired not one, but two independent fact checkers, because this book might be incredible, it might be unbelievable, but it's also completely true.
You mentioned that of all the books he stole, he never stole a Bible. Did he have a dictionary? I mean, you learn a lot from reading, but sometimes I still have to look up words.
I don't think he had a dictionary. I think that's a good question. And remember, I mentioned that he claimed he didn't have a photographic memory, but it seemed like he did. Let's just say he just remembered everything, which is pretty much the definition of a photographic memory, but he refused to acknowledge that. I think he'd already read the Bible and therefore probably didn't need another, since he probably remembered it all. Also, His hermitude was not done for religious reasons, though the majority of people who seek solitude do so. And he sort of developed his own little religion. And as far as a dictionary is concerned, I don't think he had one. He obviously had a great vocabulary, and I'm sure there was probably a couple of times he didn't know a word and maybe had to guess it in context. But I don't think he had a dictionary. I didn't see one at his site, and I actually never asked him that. Oh, man, where were you when I was interviewing him? That's a good question.
Now, Christopher Knight's family did not welcome you with open arms. In fact, because of his family's reaction to you, Knight told you to leave him alone. Was that the last time you saw him?
I mean, Chris Knight is it's probably the biggest understatement I can make, is a unique individual. He answered my letters and accepted my visits to jail and accepted even one visit to his home. And then possibly said the most complimentary thing someone like Chris Knight can say. He told me, "You're my Boswell." Basically, he said, "I give you permission to write my biography." And I felt good about that, though I didn't write a single sentence of this book for Chris. I wrote what I felt. But he had a specific amount of information he wanted to tell me and, by extension, other people that might be interested in him. And then that was it. He wasn't looking for a friend. He didn't want me to hang out with him. There was none of this artificial buddy-buddy journalist subject thing. As I told you, he's a highly intelligent human being. He wasn't going to play any of those games. And he comes from an extremely private family that did not want to speak with me. And I put it right in the book that they didn't want to speak with me. And when he said he didn't want to see me anymore, I felt that I had no other choice but to respect Chris Knight. And the way we left it was, I said, "Chris, would you, if you ever wanted to get in touch with me, would you write me a letter?" And he said, "I will." And that was more than a year ago, and I haven't heard from him. I sent him the book as soon as it was. It's probably your next question, Beth. I sent him.
Yes.
I sent him the book as soon as it was finished, and I, not surprisingly, did not hear back from him. And I'm sure there are parts he doesn't like about it. And I'm sure there are parts that he does like about it, but I really believe, or choose to believe, that I think he'll respect my efforts. I think that he chose to write back to me. He thought that the way I constructed sentences was acceptable to him. And I really, truly struggled with every sentence of this book. It's a very, very short book, and yet it took me 3 years to write the most honest account that I could. Everybody else will have a different opinion of Chris Knight, but I wrote what I felt. And I believe he will respect that.
You know, you mentioned that he didn't respect Thoreau because after 2 years he wrote a book. Yet he gave you permission to tell his story. How is that different?
If Knight had his way, he never would have come out of the woods. He didn't come out voluntarily. He was caught breaking and entering. He knew what he was doing was wrong. But if he had done it perfectly, he would have lived his entire life in the woods. Died probably in a site in the woods, had nature, you know, sort of consume his body and his possessions and disappeared from the earth without a trace. Now, things didn't happen like that. And Knight, who, as I've repeated myself a few times, Knight is extraordinarily sharp, extremely intelligent. And I think he read the situation this way, that a man who wants to be as private as possible but yet has lived such an extraordinary life is going to be hounded to tell his story forever unless he tells it. And I think he realized that the only way to really be left alone is to choose a person, tell the story, say what you want to say, and then shut up. And I believe that he actually, by sharing his story with me, without asking for anything in return, no money, nothing, by sharing his story with me, he may have been able to ensure that he can keep his privacy. That's what I believe. That's sort of what he hinted. And so it was sort of a little bit of a prisoner's dilemma. But I think since he was involuntarily extracted from his hermitage, he decided to bite the bullet and share some of his thoughts with a meddling journalist.
And he was a little worried about how you would portray him in the book. He was most worried that people would label him as crazy.
And that's an understandable label. Although, Beth, here's sort of the funny thing. I mean, I have three little kids, and I feel like I'm in a mad rush all the time. And you know, sometimes I'm in traffic while texting on my phone, while trying to deal with the kids in the back seat, while late to two different appointments. And this little thought flashes through my mind that it's not Chris Knight who's crazy. It's really the rest of us. And, you know, it goes away quickly, but it really just sort of like flashes through me, like, what am I doing? What is going on with the world? And so, yes, it's very easy to label Chris Knight as crazy. But what I ask, perhaps, anyone who takes a look into this book is to think about the choices you may have made in your own life. And how much time do you really get to spend alone? And why is it that sitting in a windowless cubicle all day staring at a screen in exchange for money is considered a really admirable thing, but sitting in a tent all day listening to the sounds of nature is crazy?
That was Michael Finkel, author of the book The Stranger in the Woods, which was published by Knopf. Thanks for joining us for Marginalia. Discover new episodes at kmuw.org or through iTunes. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita. Our editor is Luann Stevens. Our engineer is John Cyphers, and I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Volley.